Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again. We love it that you're back with us. We're brought to you by Accurate Mortgage Group. If you happen to be wanting to refinance or purchase a home, give them a shout at accuratemtg.com. They'll get you closed and back to life. I'm here with Steve Kenny. Steve Kenny, a mortgage processor extraordinaire. He's in the studio with us today. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good, Hino. How's your week been?
So far, so good. So far, so good. Well, we got a great show planned out today. We're going to be talking a little bit about a special kind of loan that's going to help people who have been affected by the tornado recently and who maybe have lost their home or have some severe damage to their home. And then we're going to visit with Joan Green, who's going to be a special guest in the studio with us today. She's a professional home stager, and she's going to let us know some tips and tricks of what you need to do to get your house ready to go on the market. And then we're going to get a little wonky with you and tell you a little bit about a special kind of loan situation that you might encounter and what to do about it. So, but first, let's get started talking about this special kind of loan. So there's a victims of a natural disaster, they often lose everything, which is really tragic, including their home. And this special kind of loan is called an FHA 203H loan. That's specifically targeted to people who've lost their homes in that kind of situation. So the government helps borrowers in presidentially declared disaster areas. So if they've declared that area a disaster area, which they have here in Nashville for certain parts of the town, and the program makes it easier for them to get a mortgage to either become a homeowner again with another house or to repair the damaged one that they have. There's a few different things that make you eligible or not eligible for the loan, right, Steve?
Yeah, there's a few things actually that are really important when it comes to determining whether or not you're eligible for this loan type. So one of the important factors is if you owned a home located in a presidentially declared disaster area.
Right.
So like you mentioned, that's one of the first things. You've got to be affected by this somehow. So either you currently own a home that's in that disaster area, or if you are purchasing a home that needs to be rebuilt that is in that area.
Right.
So you have to qualify for one of those two things.
Yeah. Another thing would be that the house has to have been lost due to the disaster. So it can't be that, you know, your house burnt down or you drove your truck in through the front door and smashed it up and, you know, yeah. It happened to be next door to the guy with the tornado damage. Sorry, that's not going to apply to you. It has to be because of the, in our case, a tornado, but, you know, in other parts of the world, it could be a hurricane or earthquake or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So something else is the home needs to be a complete restructuring or reconstruction or replacement. So like you mentioned, you know, the house has to basically be demolished or, you know, down to studs and that sort of thing. Like there has to be significant damage.
Right. And so you can use the loan to put the house back together or just get another one. You know, go ahead and purchase another one. And one of the things that they do to make it easier for people is that it's one of the few, if I think only, FHA loan that allows you to go up to 100% of the purchase price.
Yes.
So you don't need a down payment because chances are your finances are kind of be pretty wrecked at that point, you know?
So yeah. Well, yeah. So let's talk about FHA loans for a minute. So FHA is part of HUD.
You know,
FHA is the loan program. HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Department with the federal government, is really who oversees all of this. So HUD does a lot of different loan types. So they do, you know, your traditional FHA where you have to put 3.5% down.
Right.
You've got rural development loans, which is also under HUD. That's not part of FHA. That's something separate. And then HUD also oversees the VA loan process as well. That's assisted by the Veterans Administration. So this loan is very similar in a lot of regards to a typical FHA loan that you may do. The big difference, like Hino just mentioned, is the 100% financing. HUD does, or FHA does, offer another program that only requires $100 down,
right,
which is the closest they come to this. But that's only if you're buying a foreclosure from HUD.
Right.
So HUD has to already own the house. So you're very limited. Whereas with this program, because it gives you 100% financing, as long as it's in an area where it's benefited or you personally have been affected, you can go out and buy another home and use the 100% financing.
That's true. Now, because it is an FHA loan, there is going to be mortgage insurance. I mean, there's really no getting around that. That's what FHA does, and that's how they help fund what they do. It kind of helps subsidize the lower rates because they tend to be lower rates than a conventional mortgage.
Right. So part of the reason that FHA loans are, or government loans is kind of what we refer to. And I don't want to scare people by that. It's basically just means that the federal government's going to back the loan. So
right.
If for some reason something happens, these insurance policies or these insurance premiums basically get put into a large pot. And so lenders look at it and say, well, you know, the government's going to back this up. So if somebody's going to, you know, go through foreclosure because they lose their job or some other situation where they're basically not able to make their mortgage payments, the lender knows that they're going to be recouped. And so lenders offer lower rates on those because it's a little bit less risky.
It's safer. Yeah.
It's safer. Yeah.
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 Did you say yeah? Let me say yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one of the nice things is you can have what we in the business call derogatory credit. So bad stuff on your credit report, as long as it's as a result of the natural disaster, which may or may not, you know, depending on how long it is after the natural disaster that, that you go and look for this loan, it may not be on your credit report yet, but chances are, you know, you might be out of work for a little while and some bills fall behind, that kind of thing. Hopefully you have good insurance and they've kind of helped you out with that. But if anything were to happen and you were to get some Mars on your credit report, they do make accommodations for that as long as it's
yes
because of that.
Yeah, that really falls under the term extenuating circumstances. You'll hear mortgage people and, you know, it's not just a mortgage thing. It kind of applies to the rest of life as well. But it falls under the category of extenuating circumstances, meaning that, you know, your job, you would have continued doing your job except for the fact that there was a tornado and now your office building
the building is gone. Yeah. Other than that, right. I'd be at work right now.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we take into consideration things that are, you know, considered acts of God, you know, or other sort of extenuating circumstances. And we recognize that that's not really your fault.
Sure.
You know, something out of your control happened and that's why you're in the situation you're in. And HUD wants to promote homeownership, which is the reason why they offer programs like this. And
yep.
So, you know, they're really doing it to help make sure that you can kind of move on with life and get back to some normalcy.
Get closed and get back to life.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Well, as far as like your debt to income, I mean, that's about the same as it usually is. You want to be between 43 and 50%. Now, do you want to explain what that means, debt to income?
Yeah, so debt to income is how much money you make gross, so before you pay taxes or anything like that, how much money you make versus how much debt you have on a monthly basis.
And what the payments are for that debt.
And what the payments are for that debt. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it does not include everything. Like, it doesn't include your utility bills and things like that. It's basically anything that would show up on your credit report.
Yeah.
Now, like we've mentioned, this is very similar to other FHA loans with some, you know, little differences. And so when we talk about your debt to income ratio, most FHA loans really want you to be below 43%, but they also allow you to go up higher. And in this case, for this particular loan, you can go up to 50%.
Right. And that kind of falls into the category of if you've got good, what they call compensating factors.
Yes.
Which people listening to this, their heads probably just exploded. But all that means is there's other good stuff in the loan that compensates for the fact that maybe your debt to income is kind of on the high side.
Yeah.
Like let's say you have amazing credit or something, or
yeah,
or you really great income. And so there might be a good reason why, okay, well, yeah, they might be at 54%, for example, but look at this other good stuff. And so you're going to be okay. So that's kind of on a case by case basis, right?
Yes. Yeah. And another good example of that is, let's say your current house payment is, I don't know, I'm just going to throw a number out, $2,000. And the new house that you're buying is only $1,800. That's also a compensating factor.
Because you were already used to paying $2,000.
Exactly. And now you're going to pay a little bit less. And so that's a good thing. You know,
right,
you're being more conservative with your money.
It can go the other way too, right? So, I mean,
yes,
if now your payment is $2,800, it's like, oh, wait a minute, payment shock.
Yes.
That might not be a good thing. So hopefully,
yeah,
though, if you're going to rebuild the same house in the same area, you're going to be in the same boat that you were
right
before it all happened. Other than that, other things that are just common with this type of loan and FHA loans is that they do have mortgage insurance and they do have an escrow account. So you do have to pay your property taxes and your insurance as part of your mortgage. You can't kind of do that separately. It all gets rolled up into one payment, which, you know, for most people, that's actually a good thing. I resisted,
yeah,
it. My first couple of houses, I want to do that myself. I don't want you keeping my money. But then it was at the end of the year, it was like, oh, crud, we got to come up with this big tax payment that I maybe didn't save up as well as I should have.
Right.
So if you escrow it, that problem goes away because they just divide it up into 12 little payments and it's part of your mortgage. And when the tax bill comes, you know, it's already, the money's in there to be paid and they're going to pay it on your behalf. So
right. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I always recommend, especially to first-time home buyers, even if you're not doing an FHA loan and you're doing, let's say, a regular conventional loan where you have the option to pay your escrow separately, I usually recommend for at least the first go-around, just include that.
Yeah.
You know, as you get more experience of home ownership and stuff like that, and you decide, okay, I want to do that and pay it separately on my own, you know, that's a decision that you could make further on down. But for first-time home buyers where you're new to this whole experience, it's always better just to include it anyway. So I always recommend that to people.
I agree. It's just better. It's just easier planning.
Yeah.
You know, it is. You don't have that shock at the, it's funny how quick the year goes by.
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, wasn't it just Christmas a minute ago? And now it's Christmas again and your property tax bill is due. So, so that's the 203H loan. So if you happen to want to know more about that, feel free to give us a call. We're at Accurate Mortgage. You can find us on the web or at highnosehomeshow.com. You can find us that way. If you want to schedule an appointment, come in and talk to us about it. We'd be more than happy to help you. There's absolutely no cost to do that. And we really want to help out anybody who's been affected by the tornadoes here recently. So listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. We're going to come back with Joan Green. She's going to talk home staging with us and all the tips and tricks and secrets of what makes a great home stager. So come on back to High Nose Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. Thanks for joining us. So joining us in the studio right now is Miss Joan Green. She's one of the premier home stagers here in town, here in the Nashville area, does home staging. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Joan, nice to see you again.
It's good to see you.
We've known each other for a while. So I guess one of the big questions is, for most people, what the heck does a home stager do? What do you do, you know, in general terms?
What
goes on there?
That's a great question. With home staging, what you're trying to do is make a home appeal to the broadest base of buyers. So that means decluttering, depersonalizing, and creating a neutral space so that anyone that comes through the house feels the appeal of the house.
Okay.
And it's also about defining areas. I don't know if you've ever noticed when you walk into an empty house, it's much harder to sell an empty house.
Really? Why is that?
Because when people come in, in each room, they spend about 4 to 5 seconds making up their mind about whether or not they like that room.
They're just walking through.
Yeah, and they're just walking through. And because there's no furniture, there's no defining of the space, it doesn't feel like this is a place I want to live. Unless the house is just absolutely spectacular and you look out the windows and you can see the ocean, well, you know, maybe you could forget about the furniture. But home staging helps people.
I don't have a very good view of the ocean from my house.
Me
here
either.
In Tennessee.
So
I
here
just,
in Tennessee, you rarely see that.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah, you know? Rarely see that. So what home staging does is create that sense of hominess, but it also creates it in a way that appeals to more buyers.
Okay,
and that's
so
the point.
Specifically, though, what would a home stager do that's different from a designer? So if I hire somebody to come in and mm-hmm. help me decorate my house, that's a whole different ball game than if I hire you to say, help me sell my house.
Oh, yeah, definitely different. For one thing, to me, home staging is an art and a science.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an art to it, but also the science is, what do people look for? For instance, if there's a spare room as you walk in the door, maybe you set that up as a home office, because having a home office is really important to buyers in Nashville. Whether or not they work outside of the home or not, most people want to think there's some area where they can have a computer and their paperwork and
go pay bills
work,
or whatever.
Bills,
yeah.
Whatever. So that's important. And then it's just kind of, the home stager tends to know what rooms are important, what key rooms are important. So for instance, you want to make sure that you stage the living room, the dining room, the master bedroom. But let's say it's a 5-bedroom house. Every bedroom doesn't have to be staged. It becomes kind of obvious that these extra 3 bedrooms upstairs are bedrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the difference, again, is that what you're trying to do is define spaces neutralize the look of the house in a way that points out all the best features.
So when you say neutralize, I mean, I'm guessing if somebody's got a big, bright pink wall or something, you maybe don't want to have that.
Yeah, I'll give you a good for instance. Okay. Recently, I had some homeowners. They are retiring, and they love their house. The walls were really bright colors. Every room was a different color. And one of the services that I do is something called a walkthrough. It's just kind of a consulting. That's sort of the first level you walk through with the homeowner. So I walked through with them, and we went room by room, and I talked to them about what needed to be done in those rooms. And at first when I said, here are the paint colors that sell best in Nashville, and you need to repaint the whole house, let's pick one of those colors. Paint the whole house that color.
The same color.
The same color. Mm-hmm. Because it makes your house look bigger. There are certain colors that just seem to sell better in Nashville than others. The other thing is that they had old carpeting. And they were really clear that they wanted the price they were asking for or more. They didn't want to take any money off. They wanted to sell because this was their house before they got into a motorhome and started driving across the country, and they wanted the most money in their bank account.
Okay.
So, you know, I explained to them what needed to be done with their floors, also moving everything out, deciding which furniture they're keeping to go on to their next journey. There are places that you can take resale furniture around in this area that will put it on consignment. So some of it was good for consignment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of looking at all of that. And then from there, the homeowner did do all those things. They did paint. They did clean. That's one of their really important things, is to really have a house that's so clean that when someone comes through, it's almost like it's a new house.
Okay. Yeah.
And
because people get kind of grossed out. And some people actually have a hard time seeing past that.
That's
well, I can clean that.
Right.
So it's not permanent. If I was to buy this place, I would clean that.
Yes.
But some people just can't see past that. And that makes them instantly creeped out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that house is done. Next, you know.
Yeah.
So you mentioned paint colors. What kind of are the paint? I know we can't see paint colors on the air here, but what paint colors are popular in Nashville?
So the colors that are the most popular, probably the most popular color in Nashville, is a Sherwin-Williams paint color, and it's called Agreeable Gray.
Agreeable Gray. You
Agreeable
know what?
Gray.
I think, because I bought my house 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's the color of the walls.
Yeah, it's
because I had,
amazing.
they left me a, you know, some what was left over.
Swatch,
yeah, well, it's a bucket.
Can.
Yeah, they left me some.
Yeah.
And that's the, wow.
Yeah.
So I fell for it.
I fell for it too. That's actually the color of my house.
What?
Is Agreeable
okay.
Gray.
Yeah. Yep. And if I could give a homeowner any kind of advice, don't paint your house beige and don't paint the walls gold. There are things as a home stager that I can do to mitigate that. Not every home has to be repainted, but if you are going to paint, just go with Agreeable Gray.
All right. Well, do you have any idea how, you know, what the average days on market for a house that's staged versus a house that's not staged? I mean, are there any statistics on how much better a house will sell if it's staged?
A staged home will sell 80% better than a
really
unstaged
that
home.
Much.
Right now, they're saying the statistics are that a staged home will sell probably within the first 10 days to 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and that the average home across America that's not staged is on the market about 84 days.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a big difference. That's a big difference. So, Joan, have you ever had been brought in because a house is like on the market too long and they're just trying to figure out how to sell it?
Yes, I have. I've done several of those. I think the one that I think of most frequently like that was a few years ago, a year or two ago, I was asked by a realtor to look at a loft in Germantown. It was beautiful space, really it was, but it had been on the market for 7 months.
Oh, wow,
and
that never happens.
A long time.
Yeah.
That's a long time in Nashville. So sellers were getting very anxious. Well, when I went in, there was just a little bit of staging, but it had been done right by a window at the very front. It was just kind of a couple of chairs and a little table. And so I'm drawn to that like anybody else that walks in. I walked over there, looked out the window, and right across the street, not that far, was a big sign and a stack, like a smokestack, and it said crematorium on it.
And that's ice cream, right?
No. And so I asked the realtor to come and look, and she goes, wow, I never really looked out the window. Maybe that's why people always say on their remarks, when a lot of times realtors will get remarks from buyers, and it says it feels a little creepy in there. So we took it, we moved all of that stuff away from the window, we staged it, and within a month, 6 weeks, they had 5 offers on it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just about moving things and creating, bringing your eye to a different point. Yeah.
So how do you decide what style you want to use? I mean, I'm guessing it's a lot easier if the house is vacant, because it's a blank slate.
Yeah.
But if the house isn't vacant, how do you decide, you know, are you going Pottery Barn, or are you going, you know, what? How do you decide the style you're going to go with?
You go with what we call transitional furniture. You try to go with things that are pretty much Pottery Barn.
Okay.
West Elm, that kind of look. Very tailored and modern sofas.
So does that require going out and buying all new furniture? Or what do you do there?
It kind of depends. What I normally do with homeowner, is go room by room and tell them in each room what needs to be moved out and either
put in storage.
Sell it on Facebook Marketplace, or take it to one of these
out to the backyard and burn
places,
it.
Or yeah. Give it to Goodwill. Okay. You know? I would say that there are things that we can do once again to mitigate a sofa that's not exactly the style right now.
If it's from the 70s and it's like avocado green and yellow or something.
Not a lot with that. But, yeah. You know, let's say that someone bought a nice Sprint sofa 10 years ago. It's still in good shape. Its style is a little bit out. We can, with modern toss pillows and colors that are more appealing to buyers, we can use toss pillows. We can use, you know, a little throw.
Okay.
There are various things that you can do. In a bedroom, I like to use almost spa-like. So I often will just use a white, fluffy white comforter, all white linens, everything very
so you want to just basically pretend like no kids live there and use a lot of white.
Yeah, you kind of want to walk in the door and open that door to the master bedroom like this is your sanctuary.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a sanctuary. Okay. Yeah, you mentioned West Elm. I think the first time my wife and I went there, we laughed because literally everything in the place was white.
Yes.
It's like, these people don't have kids, do they, or pets. Because, it's not going to be white for long, that's for sure.
Well, you have to de-kid and de-pay while you're selling.
That's crazy. Well, listen, we got a whole lot more we'd love to ask you. Can you stick around for one more segment?
I'd love that.
Great. We're going to be back with more home staging here on High Nose Home Show. So come on back in just a minute. Welcome back to High Nose Home Show. We are talking home staging right now with Joan Green. And of course, Steve Kenny's here in the studio with me as always.
Yeah, fun topic. I'm actually really enjoying this. So we were just talking during the break. I've never staged a home. I've never had anybody come home and do it for me at my house, or, you know, been involved in that process. So if you were to come to my house, let's say, and stage the house, walk me through that process. What does that look like?
Well, cool. I'm glad you asked that question. Well, the first level is that consultation that I talked about. When I knocked on the front door, I'd ask you to come outside with me so that we could talk about curb appeal. Because the truth is that a lot of people drive up, look at the front of the house, and won't even go inside. So you don't get any chance to show them inside.
Right. They make a snap decision.
Mm-hmm. So there are some simple things that you can do that make your home look better from the outside. Things like pressure washing the front of your house if it's, you know, got that sort of green mossy look, and your sidewalks and that kind of thing. We all have it. We all know about it.
Yeah.
But when you're putting a house on the market, if I could tell you one thing, I would tell you this. When you live in a house, it's your home. You can do anything you want. If you want to plant purple petunias and green whatever, and even though they don't match, it's fine. But once you put it on the market, it's a product. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to appeal to folks, and you want your product to be as appealing as possible. So in the front yard, you're going to do that or have it done, power washing. And then after that, you don't always have to do that much, but what you do want to do is put fresh mulch around your trees and around your flower bed, pull up any weeds, and plant some colorful perennials near the door in your flower bed if you can. Then if your door is looking kind of bad and faded, paint the door. You don't have to do a lot of other, but just paint that door a nice cool color.
Now you see a lot of red doors in Nashville. Is that cool? A popular?
Yeah, they're still very popular. Black doors. Mm-hmm. They're all colors of doors. You could even, when I'm walking through, I'll suggest to you
a nice color. Paisley door.
I wouldn't do paisley, but I would.
That's why I'm not
ask
a home
stager. Yeah. If they say, paint your front door, ask them, do I just paint it back the color that it is right now, or do you have some color ideas for me? And then from there, just make sure that you have some neat numbers on the front of your house. They have some nice stainless steel ones and various things that maybe make your house look a little more modern.
That right there, though, that I know because my HOA is very specific about what the numbers look like, so you probably have to check with your homeowners association to make sure that you can do that right.
And if you have the type that are required by your homeowners association, that's what you can do. There's nothing else you can necessarily do, but they may need to be freshened up. And then I usually suggest that you put a wreath on your front door, not one of those big letters that says E or B or whatever, because that's too personal, but a nice looking wreath. Then once we come inside, I just walk room by room and give you tips on what to do. Sometimes the best way to tell you about it is to, again, give you an example. I did a family who had a house in Lebanon. They had just gotten new jobs, and they wanted to leave right away. This was just a few months back. And we walk in the house. They had furniture that was modern enough that in most rooms everything looked great. But their dining room was right by the front door as you walk in the door.
Okay.
And it had grandma's dining set. It was sentimental to them. But if you have, especially younger couples coming through who might want to buy in that neighborhood because it would have been a great neighborhood for a young family, that antique set would have been a turnoff.
Okay.
So I suggested to them that they move that set out, save it for their next home. And then in that house, I told them how to stage every room, but then I went in and just staged the dining room.
Okay, because that's the first thing you see when you walk in the door.
In that house, it was the first thing you saw.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 4 to 10 seconds to catch someone's imagination, to make them feel like maybe this could be my house. I can see myself having dinner here, having a party here. And so that's the sort of thing that I do and that a home stager does. That's how it works.
So you don't have to stage the entire house. You can just stage individual rooms. And so it sounds like also you can reuse some people's furniture, but do you rent furniture? Do you have some of your own furniture that you use? Like, how does that work?
I have tons of my own furniture that I
use. Oh, my gosh. Do you keep a separate storage facility to have all that?
I do.
Okay.
I have a huge inventory. And I tend to have furniture mostly from Pottery Barn, West Elm, some Sprint, good, what I call transitional and modern furniture.
That staging furniture is smaller than regular furniture?
Sometimes it really is. One of the things when I'm buying a sofa to put in our inventory to use for staging, I always look for very modern, sort of almost like a tuxedo sofa, no big arms, that kind of thing. Because the thing that you have to remember more than anything is that you're selling space. People want a home to be as spacious as possible. You're not selling furniture. So that's one of the reasons why we use basics. In the, for instance, in the bedroom, we won't use over a queen-size bed.
Even if the bedroom's massive?
Even if the mess, and I've staged in million-dollar homes where it was massive, but we still use a queen size bed. Now we may set up a sofa there and create a seating area, sort of thing. But again, we want people to walk in that bedroom and go, wow, look how big this is. We can put our king size bed. We can do all these different things in it. And if I fill that room up, then they won't think that. And that's one of the things that's the science of this, is that you put enough furniture in to make it feel like it's homey, you've defined that space, but you don't just go in and refill a room up. Because if you do that, then you've filled it up so much that you don't give the people who are looking at it a chance to see themselves in that space.
Great point. Now, you mentioned pointing out good features. What about the opposite? What if there's something that's obviously not a good feature, or something that maybe needs to be repaired, or something that didn't get handled, or some unfortunate thing like that? Can you minimize that?
Yes.
You don't really want to hide it, right? Or
no,
do you?
No, I mean, if there's something wrong with the house, I can't hide it. But what I can do, or what a stager does, is stage away from that so it doesn't bring your eye immediately when you walk into the room to that area that's not as good.
Okay.
Like for one of the, for instance, here in Nashville, as they're building more and more tall skinnies and houses that are closer, a lot of times you have a gorgeous house on the inside, but when you look outside, your neighbor's wall is
right there,
five feet away.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't put a great big flashy thing over there by that window
that draws your eye to the window.
That draws your eye to that immediately. And also we do sometimes hang drapes. I don't like to do that as much because once again, we're starting to put holes in walls a lot for that.
Can you hang a nice picture of the ocean on the outside of the window so that when you look out the window, it's like, hey, there's an ocean view.
I haven't tried that, but it's a good idea. I
might have to trademark that. I don't know.
I'm glad I came to the home show.
So how do you find a good home stager? I mean, is there certain kind of licensing or training involved, or how do you know that you're getting a good one?
Yeah, there are various training groups. Stagehomes.com is probably the most common. They really were probably the first people teaching staging courses. I have an undergraduate degree in fine arts and a master's in psychology. But
that's important because you're kind of trying to figure out, you're getting in the buyer's head and trying to figure out what might appeal to them.
That's important. But I do think that probably one of the most important things is that someone has experience and that they carry insurance.
There are
a lot of home stagers that don't. And it's real important that you have someone that has a good insurance company behind them, that they're paying for their business insurance, and that they can put you down as a co-insured during that time that their things are in your home.
Yeah. I actually have personal experience with the need for that because I had a home stage that I flipped probably about 10 years ago or so. It was in Green Hills and it was vacant. So we borrowed a bunch of furniture from people and staged the place, and the place got robbed.
Yes.
While we weren't there one weekend. I come in Monday morning because we didn't live there, and all the furniture was gone.
Wow.
They like backed the truck up and took everything, you know? And so thank goodness we had insurance. But, you know, if it's a vacant house, that can happen.
It can, and it's devastating to the owner, but it's also devastating to the stager. So again, I think that's just really important.
Well, you, what is a good place for people to find out more about you?
Well, you can go onto my website. It's joangreenstudio.com, and green is like the color with an E on the end.
Okay.
Or you can call me at 615-207-6980.
Okay. Joangreenstudio.com. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming in and enlightening us on the whole home staging concept, because I think that's really important, especially because we're coming up now to the big buying and selling season here in the real estate market in Nashville. So give Joan a shout and get your house ready to be sold here this coming season. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show. So come on back. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. Thanks for joining us again. I'm here with Steve Kenny, of course. So at some point in life, most people decide they're going to refinance, maybe, on their house. And I'm sure most people have heard of a second mortgage. So people might have a second mortgage or a home equity line of credit. And for whatever reason, they might want to leave that alone. And they might want to only refinance that first mortgage and leave the second one just where it is. There's a variety of reasons why you might want to do that. But what happens in that kind of situation, Steve?
Good question, Hino. So that is called a subordination. So if you decide that you want to leave the second mortgage where it is and you just want to refinance the first, you're going to be what's called subordinating the second mortgage.
That sounds kind of harsh.
Yeah. I always thought it would be a good band name, though.
Okay. Maybe. Well, why would somebody even want to do that? I mean, I guess if normally if you've got a second mortgage, most people try to consolidate them. You pay off the two mortgages and you get a new one that combines them both and hopefully lower your monthly payments. We do that a lot.
We do. Yes, we do that a lot for people. I would say probably, 90% of the people that we talk to that have a second mortgage end up including it as part of the first. But
yeah, because typically a second mortgage is going to have a higher interest rate.
Right.
And you want to get rid of that.
Right. So I'll give you an example. Actually, someone I talked to recently, they had a line of credit that they took out several years ago. They had just bought in the house, took the line of credit out, redid the bathrooms, paid off the line of credit, and it was just sitting there. So when we found out he had this line of credit, he actually forgot about it because he hadn't done anything with it for 2 years and it was at a zero balance. So we discussed whether or not he wanted to open it or keep it open or pay it off or basically just close it because there was nothing on it. So he ended up deciding that he wanted to keep it open mainly because they were looking at doing some renovations in the next few months. So by having that line of credit, he just had access to the money so he could do it.
Okay. Well, if somebody decides to do that and they have a home equity line of credit that let's say has an available credit of let's just say $50,000, but there's no balance on it right now.
Yep.
Explain how we treat that. I mean, do we treat that from a qualification standpoint as if it was maxed out? Because it could be.
Right. It could be. So let's actually take a step back and talk about some of the basics of what a subordination is and kind of how it works, right?
Sure.
So it all really has to do with lien position. Lien position is what order these different liens were filed. So,
when you do a mortgage, a lien gets filed against your house for that mortgage amount so that you can't buy or sell it without taking care of that lien.
Exactly. So the county, whichever county you live in, Davidson, Williamson, Wilson, you know, whatever county, every county is going to keep a public record of all of the transactions that are related to your property.
Right.
So, when you first buy a house, the title company is actually going to deliver what's called clean title. And that basically means that anything that had to do with that title previous to the previous owner, they're going to figure out how to make sure that stuff gets paid off when you pay the seller the money right. That you use to buy the house.
And that's why you buy title insurance when you buy a house.
Exactly. And you also take out the title insurance policy so that if someone tries to come back or some company try to go after the previous homeowner, they're not going to be able to take your house. That's what the title insurance is for.
Right.
So when you first buy the house, usually the first lien that's going to be on there is a mortgage. Because unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, most people use a mortgage to buy a house.
Right. Most people don't have $300,000-$400,000 in the couch cushion to go buy a house.
Right. So when you first buy that house and you get a mortgage, that mortgage is going to be the first new thing that gets recorded on your title. So that's going to be in first lien position.
Right.
Now, anybody who files a lien, and usually it's going to be you as the homeowner, as the person who's going to do this. If you take out any additional mortgages after that first one, they go in numerical order. So you've got that first lien for the first mortgage when you bought the house. If you go out and get a home equity line of credit, that's going to be in second lien position. And then let's say you don't pay your taxes and you get a judgment, that's going to go in third lien position. So it all depends on the order in which these are filed. Now, let's say that you have three liens on your house. It doesn't matter what they are, but you've got three liens on your house. If that second one gets paid off, that one that's in third lien position goes to second lien position.
Right.
So it's all just based on order. That's what we mean when we say lien and first lien, second lien, that sort of thing.
Now, if a second lien holder, if they find out that the first mortgage is being paid off, they may not like that, right? I mean, don't they have to agree? Yes. To stay in second position?
Yes. So that does not happen automatically. And the reason for that is because it's all based on who filed their lien first. So it's right. based on the dates. So if you've got a scenario where you have a first mortgage that you want to refinance, take advantage of the low rates that we've got right now, and you want to leave that line of credit open, well, the process is called subordination, and we have to contact the holder of the line of credit. And usually your mortgage person is going to handle this. So like all this kind of happens.
Not like you're doing
it,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So someone like myself would call the other lender. We're going to get their subordination requirements. And every company is a little bit different. So some of them are going to want a full appraisal. Some are not. Some are going to ask for title. Well, actually, everybody usually asks for title. And they're going to ask for some different documents that we've already got as part of your mortgage anyway.
Right.
So I'll contact them, find out what their requirements are. And there's usually a fee associated with applying for it. So that's one of the things I always do first is I'll call the company and find out what the fee is. And then we're going to talk to you as the borrower and say, hey, you know, here's what the fee is. Do you agree to pay it? Mm-hmm. Now, the fee can usually range anywhere from like $50 to $250. So it's really not that expensive if you decide you want to leave it open. And really the most common fee that I see is about $150. So yeah. it's really pretty affordable.
Because technically speaking, once that first mortgage is paid off, that second lien now becomes in first position.
Right.
So now if you're wanting to do a new, bigger mortgage, a new first mortgage, you have to get them to agree to, okay, you're not going to be first position now. You're going to have to stay in second place.
Right.
And that's where all that paperwork and everything comes in. And right. do you ever find that they say no?
Yes, there are some scenarios where they will say no. And that really has to do with your qualifications as a borrower. You know, if you've made all your payments on time and that sort of thing, like they're probably going to agree to it. But the other big reason that they would say no is if your home has decreased in value.
Yeah.
So using an example from actually about 10 or 15 years ago at this point, you know, back in 06, 07, people were getting lines of credit and that sort of thing. And then we had the housing crash. And
right.
unfortunately, home values went down. Well, right after that, we were seeing a lot of subordination agreements get declined. And what happens when they do not agree to subordinate, you have a couple of options. If there's no balance on the line of credit, obviously you just close it. You know, there's no money exchanging hands. You basically just say, okay, well, if you're not going to agree to subordinate, we just file the paperwork and it goes away. If you have a balance on it, we can try to roll that in as part of your first mortgage.
Pay
so do like a cash out. And if you're going to do that, you probably want to consolidate some other debts too, you know, pay off the line of credit, pay off some credit cards, just kind of get everything into one payment. The other option is you could just pay it off yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was like a $5,000 line of credit and you just had the money and said, you know what, I just want this thing gone, you could just pay it off yourself and then we just do the first mortgage.
Yeah. Well, another reason that somebody might even want to consider subordinating in the first place is that a cash out refinance is typically going to have higher mortgage rates than a non-cash out refinance, which we right. call a rate and term refinance. You're just refinancing to get a better rate and maybe change the term. If for some reason, if somebody doesn't have great credit, it could be that that cash out refinance is going to have a prohibitively high interest rate or at least something that they don't like.
Right.
So in that case, they might want to just leave that one alone so that they can do a rate and term refinance.
Right.
Now, one of the things you mentioned just a second ago about the home value is, aside from the home value, it can be riskier for the person in second position because that original first mortgage, let's just say it was $300,000. So $300,000 has to get paid back before the second mortgage can get their money. Well, now they might be refinancing and now the new mortgage might be, I don't know, $500,000 or $600,000. So now they are much further down the line. It's actually much riskier for that right. second mortgage because now they're a lot further behind in how much money has to be paid back to the first mortgage before they see anything.
Right, right. And that has to do with foreclosure. So, you know, people talk about wanting to buy a foreclosed home. You usually can get a really good deal on that.
Yeah.
Well, the reason you get a good deal on that is because the bank just wants to get rid of it. So they're going to sell it to you at a cheaper price
right,
and try
right.
and recoup their money. So the order of your lien is what determines who gets paid back first. So the first mortgage holder gets paid, then the second mortgage holder gets paid, and then whatever's left over either just goes to the bank or goes to the person who owns the home if you're doing a short sale. So there's lots of different things that can be involved in that.
Okay. Well, how does that affect the first mortgage? I mean, what happens when you do this whole subordination thing? How does that affect that?
So if you, well, there's a couple of things actually. So one, there can be an additional fee just for the subordination, but that has nothing to do with the first. That just goes to whoever's right. agreeing
and
to subordinate.
And it's pretty nominal. It's not like thousands of dollars or anything. It's right. just it's, a few hundred maybe.
Yeah, like we talked about. Yep. But it can actually increase the amount of time that it takes to do the first mortgage. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because we pretty much have to have the first mortgage almost completely finished. Like we have to have all the documents back. We have to have title back. We have to have the appraisal back, you know, any sort of stuff like that. So we've got to get all of that back, send it over to the subordinating lender, and then they have to review all of that documentation and make sure that they agree with it.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, some interesting stuff, kind of complicated stuff. But if you're in the process of refinancing, it's something that you need to know about. It's because you might be in a position where you don't want to pay off that second mortgage. So hopefully that helped you out a little bit. If you need any more information about that, give us a call. Or find us at heinoshomeshow.com. You can find my phone number. You can find you can email us directly there. You can even schedule an appointment with us to come in and chat with us in person. So thanks so much for joining us here this week at Heino's Home Show. We look forward to seeing you next week. So come on back.